It's well established that a person's nutrition can substantially affect mood, behaviour and brain function. And the human brain is quite demanding when it comes to energy consumption, using 20 to 30% of our total energy intake. So even the decision to skip breakfast has its consequences. Our food intake influences brain chemistry and neurofunction, thereby influencing mood, sleep patterns, coping skills, and performance. On their way to the brain, nutrients face several obstacles. One of these is the blood-brain barrier, which keeps many substances out of the brain even though they're circulating in the bloodstream. Some molecules fit through holes in the blood-brain barrier, others are actively carried across by other molecules, and some can even break it down. Stay tuned to find out how you can eat the right combinations to feed your brain most effectively. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Apart from energy, your brain needs certain nutrients to keep it running like a well-oiled machine. But which nutrients are needed? Where can you find them? What happens if you don't have them? The answers to these questions and more coming straight ahead. But first, a visit to the International Congress on Vegetarian Nutrition in Loma Linda, where I asked Dr. Wes Youngberg about the difference between whole grains and processed grains.
Well, number one is you're going to get fiber, whereas in processed grains, you're going to get very little fiber. Number two, you're going to get all those phytonutrients that are simply eliminated from processed grains.
What about minerals, vitamins, any difference?
Yeah, you know, they basically call it enriched white flour, which means they take away all kinds of things from it, and then they add a few elements to it, and then they call it enriched. But I wouldn't feel enriched if somebody took a $100 bill out of my wallet and put $2 back.
No, you're right. I wouldn't either. So tell us, what's the benefit of fiber in the diet in terms of health outcomes?
Well, fiber is an excellent way to slow the absorption of sugar from the meal that has carbohydrates in it. And if you have the same amount of calories with very little fiber, you're going to have a rapid increase in your blood sugars, which then will cause your pancreas to make a lot of insulin, and all that extra insulin is going to tend to drive the blood pressure up, drive even cancer risk up, and drive cardiovascular disease risk up.
So what about white flour, white pasta, white rice? They're very commonly used in the diet. So how might you go about replacing them?
You know, a Harvard study a few years ago showed that there were four food groups that created the most inflammation in the body. And we know now from other research that inflammation is the main trigger of the diabetic-related genes. It turns them on. It expresses diabetes. And so the key here, when we're eating white flour products, that promotes inflammation. One of the reasons is because it doesn't have magnesium in it. So whole grains are rich in magnesium and other key nutrients, which are anti-inflammatory nutrients.
And anti-inflammatory nutrients are valuable. Joining us in our Loma Linda, California studio is Dr. Neil Nedley, an internal medicine physician who spent considerable time researching depression, brain function, and intelligence. I asked him why it's important to think about the nutritional needs of the brain.
Well, nutrition has a lot to do with our mental performance. Actually, what we put into our body does get turned into neurotransmitters. It can help the blood flow to the brain. It can help the activity of the brain and can actually even improve our mood and help us be calmer under stress. So a lot of crucial studies have revealed that nutrition plays a vital role in regards to our mental health.
Does it impact our IQ?
It actually does.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Studies show that if we eat junk food compared to a typical American, we'll lower our IQ by about 5 points. That's a whole half of a standard deviation. And if we actually get on the ideal diet, there's evidence that we could probably increase it maybe 10 or 15 points. So it's a pretty big IQ swing that can happen just as a result of what we're eating.
And is that at any age? Is that only when we're young?
Well, no, it's at any age, yeah. And so when we're young, it has importance as well. But, of course, our IQ is our capacity to learn, retain, and apply knowledge. And so there's been more studies among students, since they're the ones having to try to retain and apply their knowledge. But it's also true in adults.
Now, you talk about a fascinating kind of case study in the prison system right, you know, here in California. Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, this was a study that actually took place as a result of an astute businessman here by the name of Terry Moreland, who actually won the contract to take over the management of a number of prisons here in California. And he hired a nutritionist to actually interview the prisoners when they came in.
Wow.
To tell them about what could happen if they got on a better diet and if they wanted to try that better diet in the prison system.
Now, most prisoners don't get that opportunity, do they?
No, they don't. It was really a wonderful opportunity. In fact, about over 90% of them elected to take the better diet, which was actually a plant-based vegetarian diet. You think a lot of prisoners would think it's punishment enough to be in prison, but to be on a plant-based diet would be cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah.
And less than 10% of them concluded that, and they just got on the typical American prison diet.
Right.
But the rest of them took advantage of the plant-based diet, and it became quite an interesting result.
Really? What happened to them?
Well, what happened, after several weeks, they noticed that they had control over their emotions. Stressful things would happen in the prison. Of course, it happens in any prison. And instead of wanting to lash out or trying to kill another prisoner or trying to, you know, maim a security guard, they recognized that they had control over their emotions. They were able to speak in measured tones, and the security people were actually listening to them and dialoguing with them, where before they didn't have any real impact that way. And so many of them concluded, after they had been on this diet, that if they had been on that diet on the outside, they likely never would have ended up in prison.
Any follow-up? Did they stay on that diet after they left prison?
Well, many of them stayed on a diet at least somewhat similar to that. And what they found out is the recidivism rate went way down. And, of course, we have major problems with recidivism in our prison system. Most people have a tendency to return. Norway has the best recidivism rate. It's about 15% that will end up back in prison. But in this group, less than 10% of them ended up back in prison. So it was a great project. And actually, of course, the prison was able to run more effectively and efficiently. But unfortunately, the state canceled Terry Moreland's contract, and the first thing they did when they took over the prisons was to just get rid of that plant-based diet. And one of the reasons why California is suffering from debt is because of their lack of being able to run prisons the way Terry Moreland did.
Wow, that's an amazing story. So are there foods and drinks that can negatively impact our brains that we might ingest on a daily basis?
Well, there are, actually. Caffeine, actually, 80% of Americans consume it, but it has an adverse effect on the adenosine receptors in the frontal lobe. And it has an adverse effect also in brain circulation in general.
So what does the adenosine in the frontal lobe do?
Adenosine actually helps us to say no to something. And so, for instance, those under the influence of caffeine have a tendency to gossip more than those not under the influence of caffeine. And, of course, gossip is sharing private information with someone who's not part of the problem or part of the solution to the problem. So there's a tendency to overdo it and when we have caffeine on board. Many people are calling it the silent killer of emotional intelligence.
Really?
And because it adversely affects frontal lobe function, our ability to analyze and make decisions, even the NFL quarterback coaches are now telling the quarterbacks not to consume caffeine because they'll make better decisions with the ball. Just with a few seconds of information, they'll make a better decision without the caffeine on board.
After we drink a cup of coffee, say, how long does that is that impact active in our brains?
Well, longer than you might think. The half-life of caffeine is about 6 hours. And so, you know, it takes it a while to go down. And then, unfortunately, we have a tendency to then get into the habit part. When we consume it regularly, we down-regulate an enzyme called acetylcholinesterase. And so that way, if we don't have caffeine on board, after a while, we feel like a zombie. And most people drink it because they feel like they need it for the stimulation, but they're just getting rid of the caffeine withdrawal effects. And if they didn't consume it at all, they'd have just as much energy as they do post-caffeine the entire day. And so even the energy argument doesn't hold water when you look at the studies.
Any other thing? Drinks. I'm thinking, you know, the drinks that are really getting bad press at the moment are the sweetened beverages, the colas and things. What impact do they have on the brain?
They do have an impact on the brain. Studies show that you're much more likely to suffer from depression as a result of drinking the even fruit juices that are sweetened, et cetera. And so the best beverage for the brain is water. And water actually does improve executive function. So when we have a hydrated brain, our brain works better. We can actually make better decisions. And so all the rest are water substitutes that don't do as well. We recommend water.
Coming up next, we'll have a sweet dessert. Stay right there and we'll be back. Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. And we're in the kitchen today, cooking up a storm. What's in the storm, Phil?
Oh, the storm has got all kinds of stuff in it.
Really? It looks good.
This is actually a recipe from a cookbook, Natural Lifestyle Cooking by Ernestine Finley.
Ooh.
And this is a healthy tapioca pudding.
Yum.
And I can't wait to get started, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get started.
So basically, we're going to start off with some of our...
Do you want me to read the ingredients for you?
That would be terrific.
Yeah? Okay. So we're going to have 1/3 cup of cashews, 3 cups of soy milk, 1/4 cup of maple syrup, 1/4 cup of minute tapioca, and 1.5 teaspoons of vanilla.
Thank you very much. And obviously, I'm excited to
get
into this.
You are. Yep, yep.
So basically, we're going to start by blending a little bit, and I'm going to take a little bit of our milk.
Oh, right.
And we're going to put it into our blender. We're going to save some for when we do the actual boiling.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to put in our cashews.
Right. If you put too much fluid in with your cashews, you end up not actually blending them smooth. So good move to hold some back.
And we're just going to start going.
All right.
Now, I want to check on that real quick. It sounds a little bit solid. Let me try that one more time.
Oh, yep.
Okay. From here, what we want to do is we want to boil everything and get it into our pudding in our solid state.
Okay.
So we can start by putting in the milk.
The milk.
And then we're going to put in everything else. So you can put in, the vanilla. And then we've got our maple syrup.
Yum, yum. I love maple syrup.
Oh, isn't it great?
Oh, yeah.
Now, are you one of these that it has to be the pure maple syrup?
Oh, yes. Of course. I was so disappointed one day. I went to the supermarket. I just arrived in America. Went to the supermarket and this jar said maple syrup. And I thought, well, that's pretty good price for maple syrup. And I got it home. And I went to put it on my pancakes one morning and I had the greatest disappointment.
And
it was sugar and water with some maple flavoring.
And if you're expecting really good maple syrup, that's going to be such a letdown.
Oh, it was. It was. Because as soon as I tasted the first bite, I thought, something wrong with this maple syrup. I'm so close to Canada, it should taste like the real thing.
And so when you're making this, make sure it's the real thing. You're going to enjoy it that much more.
Yeah.
So basically, we've got that in there. You threw in our tapioca, and our viewers are going to want to cook it and boil it until it hardens up. And it's not going to get hard, I'm sorry, but until it firms up.
Yeah, with tapioca, you want to see it clear rather than white when it's cooked, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Because that means the starch is actually being cooked right through. So that's going to take a little while. So I think it's down to eating, isn't it?
That's exactly
this
right. We're
so
going to skip to the best part.
The best part.
This is what I love. You can put it with different fruits. Choose your favorite fruits. Mm. Now, I happen to know that you are just horribly allergic to strawberries. So I made it a point to put in some strawberries, and that guarantees that I've got an entire cup to myself.
Aww.
But I made sure to make one for you that doesn't have any strawberries.
Wow.
So you can enjoy it and take part in it.
I like it's got two little eyes here.
Exactly.
They're a bit bloodshot. But right, let's go for it.
If you're going to make food, have fun with it. That's the way that I think.
And berries are so pretty to work with in the kitchen. Mm. There's nothing like tapioca pudding.
That's exactly it. And as you know, I love consistency. And that's what the tapioca gives to the pudding.
Mm-mm. That is wonderful. It's so tasty. You can taste that vanilla flavoring coming through and the maple. Oh, and the maple syrup.
Whoa. And there goes our next batch.
Yes. Let's move swiftly on to our video.
So what we recommend is a simple diet. A diet that doesn't need nutrition labels. Have you ever noticed? You look at some of these food products, and you find there's a nutrition label there, and it tells you how many calories. It tells you how much salt, how much sugar. It tells you how much fiber. It's all there. But let me give you some suggestion here. If you want to live a healthier and happier life, if you want to be well, if you want to reverse heart disease and many of these chronic diseases, begin to shift more towards dietary products. Shift more towards foods that don't have a nutrition label. Example, have you ever taken a look at a tomato? Do you find a nutrition label on a tomato? No. Have you ever looked at tomato ketchup? Do you find a nutrition label there? Yes, isn't it? Have you ever found a nutrition label on a potato? You won't find it. How about potato chips? There you find them. Have you ever found a nutrition label on corn? You buy some ears of corn. Corn as it comes to us in nature, no nutrition label. You look for some corn chips, nutrition label. Why? Because nutritionists have learned that when you refine products, usually you add too many things or you take too many things that are important out of the food itself. And so the consumer has become made aware. The consumer can learn which products are too high in salt or too high in sugar or too high in calories and can make some intelligent choices. But when you zero in on foods as grown, simple foods, fresh fruits and vegetables, whole grain products. When you zero in on lentils and beans, you don't have to worry too much about getting too much of some of these things or not enough. Nature seems to know how to balance things out. But once you get into the area of processing foods, there is a dietary change taking place. And furthermore, we have to recognize that the American diet, the Western diet, has been dramatically changing in the area of animal products. We have seen in the last 100 years an almost doubling of the intake of animal products. And of course, animal products are largely the source of cholesterol, the only source of cholesterol. And furthermore, most of the animal products are fairly high in fat. So when you look at a sausage, you may have 80% of the calories in that sausage coming from fat, not in your best interest. Fat, you wear it. You carry it. When you look at sirloin steak next time, just think about it. It's not so much the protein that you have been brainwashed to think about. When you think about this sirloin steak, you're looking at a 75% fat glob right there.
You might not look at steak quite the same way again. Now, let's go back to Loma Linda for more from Dr. Nedley about nutrition and the brain. I asked him if cholesterol is damaging to the brain.
Too much cholesterol does adversely impact the brain. Not only does it cause atherosclerosis, so it decreases the circulation of the brain that way, mm-hmm. but we also know even if your blood vessels are clear and your cholesterol levels are high, you're much more likely to suffer from depression, and you're much more likely to not respond to medication if you are given medication for depression. And so every depressed patient really should have their cholesterol measured, because that's an indicator that they could modify to actually get the depression under control.
Wow. Are there particular kinds of cholesterol that is worse than others?
There is, yes. Oxidized cholesterol. The more heavily oxidized it is, the more damaging it is.
So how does cholesterol become oxidized?
Well, just by being exposed to the air, and particularly if we're going to mix it up in a sugary environment, it tends to get very heavily oxidized.
Hmm.
So the worst cholesterol.
Yeah, give it to us.
That you can eat in foods comes from custards. And that's where you have milk, sugar, eggs mixed up and kind of pulverized up together. You're going to heavily oxidize it. It takes less than 24 hours after you consume that to have some major damage to the blood vessels. Second most damaging was actually pancake mix. It was Aunt Jemima's pancake mix, which was primarily powdered eggs. And the third most damaging was Parmesan cheese, powdered cheese, which actually ties with lard as being the third most damaging.
Now, custard, does that include ice cream? I'm thinking of
it does. The most commonly consumed custard in America is good old-fashioned ice cream.
Oh.
And that's why it's good to look for the ice cream alternatives that don't have any cholesterol. There's a lot of them out there.
Yeah, there are.
And there's some actually great new ones that are not soy-based but oatmeal-based. Ice cream. One manufacturer has made 32 flavors, one more than Baskin-Robbins. and the ones I've tasted it, it's actually better than any regular ice cream I've consumed.
And we won't get depressed after eating it.
Exactly. Yeah.
That sounds all too good. Now tell us, are there nutrients that if we're deficient in them, that we're more prone to depression?
Yes, absolutely. If we don't have enough tryptophan on board, particularly tryptophan that can get into the brain,
What does tryptophan do in the brain?
Well, tryptophan gets turned into serotonin and in the daytime in response to light. And then at night, if we're sleeping well, it turns into melatonin, which gives us the rest and rejuvenation we need at night.
Wow. So how do we get it into the brain?
Well, we need to eat it not with meat, per se, because you need carbs on board. Turkey, for instance, is high in tryptophan, but you don't really get any tryptophan from turkey into your brain. It doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier efficiently. And so you need to get it from plant-based sources. And there's another advantage when we get it from plant-based sources. There's less amino acids to compete with tryptophan in getting it across the blood-brain barrier. And it's the least abundant amino acid in the diet. So we want the competitors low.
Mm.
And so studies show if we're on a lower protein plant-based diet, we actually get more tryptophan into the brain.
Wow. Any other amino acids or nutrients?
Tyrosine.
Tyrosine?
Yeah, tyrosine gets turned into norepinephrine and dopamine. And
gets us skipping.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
Dopamine is that pleasure chemical.
Yeah.
And the norepinephrine
gets us going.
Gets
energy.
Us going. Focus.
Yeah.
That's right.
Right.
And so the same thing. We want more plant-based sources of tyrosine because it'll get into the brain more effectively and less competitors for tyrosine. And so foods like pumpkin seeds and soy and almonds. These are good sources of both tyrosine and tryptophan.
Okay, what's the highest food for tryptophan?
Highest food for tryptophan actually is tofu, which is, of course, concentrated soy.
Yeah.
And the highest food for tyrosine actually is pumpkin seeds.
Coming up after the break, get ready to exercise with Sean, but first, a news report with a difference. I spoke to Dr. Rizzo at the headquarters of the Adventist Health Study and asked him what the study has taught us about fiber.
Well, something that we can say is that the vegetarian population, as one would expect, has a much higher intake of fiber than the non-vegetarians. And that is, of course, related with some benefits.
And how do you ascertain how much fiber they're getting?
Well, what we have is the subjects who were in the Adventist Health Study, they had to fill out a huge questionnaire. And maybe that's an opportunity to say again thanks to all the participants. Maybe some of them are seeing your show. And there were nearly 100,000 participants all over the U.S., Canada, and some of the islands, and even in Hawaii, all over. But the bulk of the participants was here in the U.S. And so they had to fill out this questionnaire, and there were detailed questions about over 200 food items. So you can imagine that it is a vast amount of data, and some of the colleagues, especially Dr. Karen Siegel, she prepared a lot of this database to make it then available for further analysis.
What does this graph show us?
So what we see here is the overall fiber intake in the Adventist Health Study, and what we can see is that there is a significant higher intake of fiber in non-vegetarians in comparison to lacto-ovo-vegetarians.
What's that going to mean for, as a health outcome?
Well, we know that fiber has some health benefits. I mean, it's not just... originally, it was thought of that fiber is just something that is unnecessary. It's there, it's bulk material. And I'm originally from Germany, and that was called Ballaststoffe. That was, and now if you get some German here too, that was used in the, as a term when you were on the ship and you had some bulk and you had to ballast and then you threw it away. If you had it or not, I mean, maybe it's better not to have it. But what we found is that fiber can be important in the digestive process, so it helps us in digesting food, in giving us the right amount of transit time. And depending on the fiber type, it can have also some protective propensities in regards to some types of fibers. There are studies, some types of cancers. Mm-hmm. There are some studies on that. And it can overall have a very important factor mm-hmm. impact.
Welcome back. Sean, what have you got for us? I see we've got a nice pink toy here.
We do.
Where's your one? That one must be for girls because it's pink.
Yeah, mine got deflated. So it wouldn't be much use.
Oh.
I went for it and it was like, I couldn't find the pump. So.
Oh. Oh, shame.
Yeah.
You'll just
so don't
have
worry.
You can borrow mine.
No. I can put you through the ringer and
oh,
I'll pretend
really?
To be the trainer.
Oh. Okay? All right.
All right. So what we're going to do, we're going to get warmed up. All right. We're going to put the right foot in the front, left foot in the back. We're going to pretend like there's a line cutting right in between our legs and we're going to exchange. Okay?
Okay.
Looks like this. All right. In 3, 2, and 1, go. Now, we're going to be doing some abdominal exercises. And what I like to do before abdominal exercises is get the body nice and warmed up.
Yep.
Okay? In order for you to burn maximum amount of calories. Okay? So I would do this for about 30 to 60 seconds. And what ends up happening is that when you go into the abdominal exercises, you sweat so much, you just feel so much better. 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Okay? You see?
Yeah.
You see?
You're right. Can
that
we go
it?
Home
Are we
now?
Done?
Yeah, we're done.
Are we done? But remember, we got one pink ball.
Yeah,
so
we
it's
have.
Not me.
And you're the one who's holding it.
So that's
this
why I
is
wanted.
Wonderful. It's getting better and better. No, sorry.
That's why I wanted to do such a nice warm up. Because it'll benefit you. No, it benefits you, not me.
You're so selfless.
No, I'm an equal opportunity.
Selfless, very selfless.
All right, I want you to have a seat. All right,
so. This way?
Yep. You're going to lay all the way back. And we're going to do a ball exchange, okay?
Okay.
Careful. We're working your adductor muscles, squeezing that ball, okay, as hard as you can, so that it doesn't fall. Okay, we're gonna go down, okay? As you come up, your hands are gonna take the ball, and it's gonna go back, okay? this leg doesn't touch the ground. Okay?
Back up. That's cruel.
No, it's not. There it is. And back down. Perfect. Back up. If I had a ball, I would be doing this with you.
Right.
But since I don't, you are a great example. So this is a great exercise to work the transverse abdominals, which is right? Everybody wants to work that lower abdominal area, so this is a great exercise for that, okay?
We're starting to flag here.
Yeah.
This is bad.
That's bad. All right, so that's a good exercise. You can do that for about maybe 20 reps. Each one is a rep, okay? As you come down, as the ball comes down, count that as a rep.
Okay. So one for the foot, two for the head.
Yep.
Okay.
So we're gonna send you down there. We're gonna put your feet, you can lay back. And I want you to put your feet right up here. Okay. We're gonna work the core, mm-hmm. but instead of doing the plank like we normally do, this is called a bridge, a bug bridge, okay? So now you're gonna dig your heel right into the ball, okay? And I'm gonna hold it. You can pretend like there's a wall here mm-hmm. if you're just beginning, okay?
Okay.
And all I want you to do is dig your heel into the ball and pick your glutes up, yes, okay? But I want you to push this down, okay?
Yep.
And then back down. All right, we're gonna go for about 10 reps, all right? All the way down, and then, all right, so go ahead. One, go ahead, two, three, all the way up, four, there you go.
Uh-huh.
Five.
That's just my heels.
Yes. Okay. Now get that butt up a little bit, come on. Yes. Come on. Eight, give me two more. Nine, and I want you to squeeze your glute and hold. Hold it there, okay? Now, if I were to let this ball go, your body will now recruit muscles in order for it to keep it in that spot,
okay?
That's the benefit of using an unstable surface. You now recruit your smaller muscles to stabilize your very big muscles, okay?
Right.
Not bad, right?
Oh, yeah.
It could be a little
bit. It makes you burn.
It does. So I'm going to take the burden off of you.
Brutal today.
And we're gonna do a lunge, all right? But since we have an unstable surface, all right? Mm-hmm. We're gonna keep the foot right into the ball, okay? Now, I'm trying to balance there, all right? And what I'm gonna do is try to lunge, okay? So, here. You can press this ball up against a wall, all right? If this is too advanced for you. But the goal here is to point your toes right into the ball and come down into a stationary
wow.
lunge.
Wow, that's really brutal.
There it is. Okay, working a lot of the core, okay, stabilizing, and then coming up. This leg is the leg that's working a lot, okay? Then you switch side. You wanna try it? Choose wisely.
Do I wanna try it? Would you try it? No.
So you're just gonna point one foot, there you go, right into it.
I'm not sure I'll be able to do this.
Go ahead. So remember, we're gonna start off as if, all right, this is holding onto a wall. There you go. Perfect.
Holding it.
There you go. I want that left leg to pop forward a little bit more. Take a little bit forward. There you go. There you go. I'm gonna let the ball go. Perfect. That's taking your regular lunge and advancing a little bit, just so that you can take it up a notch.
Okay.
There you go.
All right.
Not bad, right?
Not bad.
So that's how you use a stability ball, just in a few exercises.
Yep. Okay. Great. Well, thank you. That was great. I guess we should cool down. Should we cool down?
We'll take that back.
Yep, we'll take it back.
All right. Hands down to the middle. Let's walk it forward. And let's stretch our right calf. Here. And switch. I really like to do extensive stretching so that it could minimize the soreness for the next day.
It does, and it also keeps you flexible.
It does.
Which is really important
come up.
A fitness program.
Absolutely. If you do not stretch or if you're not warming up, you run the risk of injury. And
excellent.
That can set you back and truly discourage you.
Just discourage you from exercising.
There you go. So make sure you warm up, cool down, have fun.
Have fun, that's the key.
There it is.
And now we have another ageless advantage.
What could you do with an extra 5 years? earn a degree, visit the seven modern wonders of the world, or kiss your great-grandchild's cheek. You can do a lot in 5 years. 5 years is the difference that researchers found in the life expectancy between vegetarian and non-vegetarian Adventists. The Adventist Health Study found that vegetarians lived 5 years longer than their non-vegetarian counterparts. Adopting a vegetarian diet could add 5 years to your life and is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for your questions. Someone texted, are coconut oil and almond oil good for the skin? Do we need to be concerned about chemicals in lotions and creams? Coconut and almond oil are fine for the skin. Olive oil also works. And if you want to know more about chemicals and lotions and creams, then a great website is the Environmental Working Group's website, www.ewg.org. They have a comprehensive cosmetic database on there. Someone called and asked, how can I build up my muscles to make them stronger? Well, you strengthen your muscles by using them. So either an everyday heavy work or actually doing some weightlifting. Marie from Georgia asked, my triglycerides are high. What can I do to lower it? Well, controlling stress is a big part. Exercising every day and eating plenty of whole grains, limiting your fat intake and keeping that sugar down. A text message came in from Grace. She says, my husband's receiving treatment for some years for his prostate, which is enlarged. What does robotic surgery entail for the prostate? Well, it's a minimal access surgery that's done remotely. The surgeon sits away from the patient at a computerized console, and he has excellent vision and precision by using robotic surgery. It's not really a robot doing the surgery. The surgeon's still doing it. Thanks for sending your questions. Keep them coming. The phone number is 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Now, everyone likes bananas, so check this out. Wheat is a favorite grain for two reasons. It's easy to separate from the seeds from the plant due to the gluten content, and the dough becomes elastic when it's mixed with liquid. This makes it very versatile because then it can be cooked whole or turned into porridge, bread or pasta. It's not surprising then that two-thirds of the grain consumed in America is wheat. Unfortunately though, most of it is not whole wheat, even though that has well-established benefits like 30% fewer strokes, less heart disease and type 2 diabetes, better weight management, less asthma, lower blood pressure and fewer inflammatory diseases. Different varieties of wheat look fairly similar but offer different nutrients and can be digested a little differently. So that people with celiac disease who should avoid all wheat, but some people with non-celiac gluten sensitivity are able to tolerate farro, spelt, kamut or Khorasan wheat. So experiment a little, you may be pleasantly surprised. Whole wheat is easy to cook. Wheat berries cook overnight in the crock pot. Wheat flakes take 30 to 40 minutes to steam. Bulgur wheat cooks in about 25 minutes. Whole wheat pasta like this in just 8 minutes. And whole wheat couscous is already cooked. Just soak in boiling water. It's that easy. Bon appetit. Before the break, we were discussing two important amino acids that are good for the brain to function, tryptophan and tyrosine. I asked Dr. Nedley to give us some other sources of tyrosine apart from pumpkin seeds.
Another source actually is watermelon and mustard greens for tyrosine. There is not as much tyrosine as there is in pumpkin seeds, for instance, or in spirulina, but there's less of the competing amino acids, so we get more tyrosine into the brain. And if you're on a caffeine-free program and you eat watermelon, it is going to stimulate you to the point where you may not be able to sleep well at night. And so we recommend for those on a caffeine-free program, don't drink or eat the watermelon at night unless for whatever reason you're driving all night and need to stay up. But
going to the bathroom a lot during the night.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's more of a breakfast food or more of a lunch food, but it definitely can rev you up and keep you alert for a long time.
So watermelon, mustard greens, pumpkin seeds for the tyrosine.
That's right.
Tofu.
And spirulina, too.
And spirulina.
Yeah, the seaweed. Yeah.
Wow, so if you really want to stay up all night without using amphetamines, you could have a watermelon and spirulina drink.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Are there particular nutrients that can positively impact the brain?
Well, another nutrient is omega-3.
Mm.
Omega-3 is an essential fat in the diet, but a lot of Americans are getting too much of the omega-6 and not enough of the omega-3. And that can have an adverse effect on brain performance.
Hmm. So how do we get omega-6? Where would we find that?
Well, omega-6 is plentiful in particularly corn oil, and a lot of the vegetable oils themselves have a lot of omega-6. Olive oil doesn't, but most of the other plant oils are going to be quite high in omega-6.
So what does olive oil have in it?
Olive oil has oleic acid, which is a monounsaturated acid. Omega-6 is a polyunsaturated acid.
Okay.
And omega-6, we need omega-6 too. It's not that we don't need any at all, but omega-6 is much more plentiful.
Mm.
Omega-3 is an essential fat, and that one is least plentiful in the typical American's diet.
And when you say essential fat, you're meaning that we have to get it in our diet. Our body can't make it.
That's right. Can't make omega-6 or omega-3.
Right. So omega-6 we've got in abundance. Where do we get our omega-3s?
Omega-3 spinach is actually a pretty good source. Mm. It has a very good ratio, high omega-3, low omega-6. Edamame or green soybeans are high in omega-3, lower in omega-6. And so is flaxseed. Flaxseed has a very nice omega-3 to omega-6 ratio. Chia seeds.
Okay.
As well. And so, in fact, flax has more omega-3 than any fish, on the planet as far as milligrams is concerned per serving.
Okay. Now, to get the omega-3 out of the flaxseed, do you have to break it up? Can you take it whole?
Well, you'll get omega-3 by taking it whole, but you'll get more by powdering or, actually grinding the flaxseed like in a little coffee grinder. And you'll have more omega-3 available to you that way.
Right. Now, you mentioned the fish, because most people, if you say omega-3, they say fish.
Right.
So, but I notice you've been steering towards a plant-based source of omega-3s. Why is that?
Well, omega-3 in the fish is good, but there's other things in the fish that are not so good that actually counteract that effect. You can't find fish anywhere that are mercury-free now. And there's no such thing as mercury-free fish oil, even though there's a company that's patented a mercury removal process, and you can get omega-3 now as a prescription from your doctor that has less mercury in it. There's still mercury in that. And mercury has almost the opposite effects of omega-3. It's going to decrease your concentration. It's going to increase irritability and make your mood a lot less controllable. Mm. And it can even adversely affect your IQ and your ability to learn and retain and apply knowledge.
Mm.
And so I like to get the omega-3 without the risk.
Right, because the mercury crosses the blood-brain barrier very readily, doesn't it?
It does. It does, yes.
Now, if we look at omega-3s, though, there's the ALA that turns into the EPA that turns into the DHA, and we're told that, well, you can't really do that with the plant sources of omega-3. Is that really true? Or are there plant sources of DHA?
There are plant sources of DHA and EPA, actually the same plant sources that the fish get them from. Fish don't make EPA or DHA. They get it in their diet, and they get it from the plants of the waters. And so sea plants tend to be very high in EPA and DHA. And you can actually get, it's a lot cheaper to get your EPA and DHA through plant sources that are concentrated in capsules that are going to be mercury free as compared to the fish that get it secondhand and then concentrate the mercury there.
And that's because as you move up the food chain, that mercury gets magnified and magnified. So if your algae will have very little mercury, even though they're in the water, is that correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And also, we can still make the EPA and the DHA from the ALA. There's well-documented plant-based, lifelong plant-based vegetarians that have plenty of DHA in their brain. So they're making it. And there is some evidence that maybe they're making it more efficiently than the typical American.
We'll be back after a short break. Stay there. Before the break, Dr. Nedley was telling us about the use of plant oils versus fish oils to source omega-3 fatty acids. We attended the International Congress on Vegetarian Nutrition at Loma Linda University in California. I took the opportunity to speak with Dr. Sujatha Rajaram, who has researched plant oils. I asked her if they have the same benefits on health as animal or fish oils.
When you look at the particular studies that we work with here in Loma Linda, it's mostly with the walnut as a whole food as opposed to just the individual oils. And we've also worked with microalgae oil. And the sources, they both are sources of omega-3 fatty acids, but the microalgae oil has specifically the longer chain EPA and DHA, and the walnuts and flaxseed and those things have mostly the alpha-linolenic acid. More and more studies are actually showing now that the ALA has their own inherent health benefits. In fact, there was a meta-analysis that basically showed that there may be a protection from increasing the intake of ALA for cardiovascular disease outcomes. Of course, these are from cohort studies or epidemiological studies, and so they don't necessarily show a cause and an effect, but they are more likely to have protective effects, and we are looking to explore mechanisms.
So when you do your studies, how do you measure the effect of the walnut or the microalgae oils?
What we normally do is the best indicator in the human cells is the red blood cell membrane. So when we feed walnuts or when we feed a particular oil, we feed them for about 4, 6, or even 3 months. And then at the end of that, we draw blood and we take out the red blood cell membrane and we look at how the fatty acids have changed in that membrane to give us an indication of whether these people that ate that have had any response to that. So in our studies, which we looked at with walnuts, for example, or flaxseed, which has both the alpha-linolenic acid, and in comparison to the ones that come from marine sources, when we did studies to look at how they respond in the body, we were able to look at the red blood cells, and just the plant N3 fatty acids, the ALA, we were able to show that it increased the red blood cell membrane levels of EPA. So if you're looking at increasing EPA levels, you can do that with plant oils of which are rich in alpha-linolenic acid.
Well, that's an exciting outcome, because we're often told that the fish oils are the only ones that can actually have that impact on reducing our cardiovascular risk. But this sounds like you're showing that you can get some progression along there.
Yes, the thing is that fish itself gets the omega-3s from the marine source is actually microalgae. So the original source is a seaweed, and it's just that the fish happens to concentrate that in the liver, so it becomes a highly concentrated source, and a lot of studies were done in that in the beginning. But now I think more and more people are beginning to look at just ALA, the plant-derived N3 fatty acids, and are starting to show that it also can be protective. And then if in the context of a plant-based diet, if you're looking at eating a more healthful, wholesome plant-based diet, there are other factors in that can also help to reduce your cardiovascular disease risk. So overall, we may get the risk to benefit, the benefit ratio may be higher with plant oils, especially from the omega-3 family.
So oil from microalgae are a great source of omega-3s, including the long-chain omega-3s that are also found in fish. Now, back to our discussion with Dr. Nedley on nutrition in the brain. I asked him if there were other nutrients that constitute good brain food.
There are several. Resveratrol would mm-hmm. be one. Also, iron would be another, but not too much. Mm-hmm. Resveratrol can increase blood flow to the brain by as much as 30%.
Wow.
And, of course, it's an antioxidant as well, may have some protective effects as far as memory decline. And so we recommend foods that are high in resveratrol. Iron also.
Right. What foods might be high in resveratrol?
Well, of course, the skin of red grapes is the one that's most commonly talked about. But there's others. Bilberries. There's the berry families, even blueberries, have some resveratrol. Peanuts, actually, are a good source of resveratrol.
Wow. Now, iron. Tell us about iron.
Iron, you need to have iron in order to make adequate amounts of GABA in your brain. This is where GABA aminobutyric acid, it actually helps you to stay calm under stress. There's also iron-dependent mechanisms in helping us to make enough serotonin and dopamine and norepinephrine. So it actually has some across-the-board benefit. And if we're too short in iron, it's going to adversely affect brain chemistry, and even our emotions can be adversely affected.
And we're better to get that out of our diet than to supplement, aren't we?
That's right, yes. In fact, supplemental iron can cause us to get too much, and iron is a prooxidant. It does the opposite, actually, of resveratrol being an antioxidant. Right. So too much iron can cause heart disease, even theoretically cancer and other problems. And so it's best to get it from plant-based foods.
Like
whole wheat bread.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Yeah, whole wheat bread is a great source. Mm-hmm. Kidney beans, lima beans, you know, even avocado has some. And then soy is very loaded with iron. And there's rice bran, actually, is a very high source of iron. And so if we get it from the plant-based foods, it actually prevents us from getting too much. If we get it from animal-based foods, which can be high in iron because we're eating some of the blood, so we're getting directly from the blood of animals, we don't have any choice but to absorb that, even though our iron levels are high. And so the plant-based iron, we absorb it when we need it. If we don't need it, our absorption is not so good.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, all these wonderful foods, I'm just thinking of breakfast, you know, watermelon and blueberries and whole wheat bread. How important is breakfast for the brain?
Oh, breakfast is very important for the brain. Actually, it's the most important meal of the day. There's been a lot of studies done on even scholastic performance, on your ability to control your emotions, even your ability to stay calm while taking a stressful test.
Is that right?
Is better by eating a good breakfast. Not just a coffee and donut breakfast, but a breakfast that has enough protein and fat and carbohydrates and is a nice healthy breakfast goes a long way in regards to mental performance the entire day.
So give us a sum up. What dietary pattern is best for the brain?
Well, the dietary pattern that is best is a plant-based diet where there's going to be vegetables and grains and even healthy nuts in moderation are good for the brain. Fruits also are good for the brain, particularly if we're not getting the refined sugar and, you know, just getting the fruit juices, et cetera. We want to stay clear of the refined sugars. And I have to tell people it's not the fruit juices that grow on trees. It's the actual fruit. And we get a lot better brain performance out of the fruit than we do the fruit juices.
So it's a whole food plant-based diet that you're recommending.
It's a whole food plant-based diet, yes. That has a lot of superior benefit.
And any supplements that you would add to that?
Well, B12. What we talked about iron also is some degree true with B12. We need to have enough B12 in order to get enough dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin, S-adenosylmethionine. That supplement called SAMe actually comes from getting enough B12 in our diet. And so B12 is crucial. And that's about the only, you know, depending on the individual, if you're on a plant-based diet, that's about the only thing I'd make sure that you have enough of.
Right, because on a plant-based diet, you've got quite a high chance. I saw some recent data that suggested at this nutrition conference that it might be even 40% of people that are under 250, which many physicians
And I like to
say.
Keep people above 500, actually. From
Do you?
A brain health standpoint, I like to keep them above 500. So unless you have access to a laboratory where you can measure, you can't really go bad with taking too much B12.
So there you have it. A whole food, plant-based diet is the one that's best for your brain. Foods can either support or impair cognitive function and mood. The choice is yours. So be sure to get plenty of fruits and green leafy vegetables, tofu, pumpkin seeds, flax seeds, and even microalgal oil. And stay away from sugar, alcohol, caffeine, nicotine, cholesterol, and dietary excess. Know what your iron and vitamin B12 levels are and supplement them if you're deficient. And remember to start every day with a wholesome breakfast. In our next show, we'll look at deficiencies that can happen with a vegetarian diet. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you then.